Welcome back into another edition of College Golf Talk. Steve Burkowski, Brentley Romine with you. It is 2025. I'm going to say Happy New Year, partner, because it's the first one of the new year. I know there's always that conversation when you stop saying it. We're almost in February. But good to be back. The spring season off and running, and our little three-month sabbatical has quickly come and gone. And goodness, we're what, 4 months away, a little less than 4 months away from crowning national champions at La Costa. But always good to reconnect and get this new year off and running in the college golf world.
I always thought, Burko, that as long as you're still in January, and it's the first time that you are seeing said person, it is okay to say Happy New Year. Once you get to February 1st, you got to find something new to talk about because that is no longer a topic of conversation. How was your holidays? I mean, you were in Argentina at the Latin America Amateur Championship. I was battling a flu bug and a pregnant wife. Well, not battling a pregnant wife, but wife is pregnant due here in early March. But yeah, we're all just getting on the back end, but have kind of lived vicariously through you, if you will, in your early travels for 25.
Yeah, it was fun. Holidays were great. Made a trip up to New York City, went to a Rangers game, a Jets game. The boys saw snowfall for the first time, so that was enjoyable. And as you mentioned, was in Argentina, was very fortunate to get the call to join the broadcast team at the LAAC. Never been there before. Heck of a week, heck of a performance by Justin Hastings. And to see in a decade of that championship from Augusta National Golf Club, the RNA, the USGA, the three big powers to be, if you will, in the game of golf, working collectively, enjoyed it. Thoroughly, thrilled to be a part of it. Had a lot of fun, and seeing boots on the ground for the first time there, I get it. We, you know, y'all get it from afar, but to be a small part of it, really, really enjoyable. And now Justin Hastings has a really busy schedule in terms of major championships, getting into the Masters, the U.S. Open, and the Open. So good to be there, good to be back, and good to be off and running here as the new season is upon us. And you know, you went deep into the spring preview, fall recap combo, if you will.
Just scratch.
Yeah, well, that's what you do. That's what you do. And, you know, what we're seeing early in 2025 are college standouts getting reps at PGA Tour events. And Luke Clanton, who's been center stage on that platform, and understandably and rightfully so, he's 2 points away from getting a PGA Tour card through the accelerated program. That it's going to happen, you know, whether it's playing in tour events, making cuts, as many have thought. If he doesn't win the Hogan Award, then the Hogan Award shouldn't exist because it's 12 months of amateur and college golf. So I think it's
anything
just
can
a matter
in 4 months, Burko. Biastair could go on a run. He could win everything.
True. I don't want to slight anyone else, but when you consider the fact Luke Clanton did something last year that hadn't been done since, what was it, Nicklaus in 61 or something? I mean, it's a done deal. In my estimation, I guess it couldn't work out. But it is intriguing, and I'll be curious to see the balance from Luke or Jackson Koivin of getting tour starts, making it work in a college schedule, because, you know, there's a commitment to your university as well. But I think the coaches and teammates get the bigger understanding. And what Luke Clanton's done for the last, call it 7 months, I'm not quite sure I've seen a run like that from a collegiate player. But back in the day, you didn't get a lot of college kids getting PGA Tour starts. So it's very difficult to get a comp to maybe John Rahm from a decade ago, where he played in Phoenix and finished in the top 10. Yeah, there's always a one-off, mm-hmm. but you're seeing Luke and others getting 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 starts on the PGA Tour. That was unheard of 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. It just didn't happen.
Yeah, there's definitely more ways to quantify how these college kids are stacking up against the pros these days, accelerated being one. And we know when they rolled out the program a couple years ago, they went back 10 years. And John Rahm wasn't one of those guys who would have gotten to the 20 points with the initial criteria that they set forth. I think it was Patrick Cantlay, Justin Thomas, and there may have been one, Patrick Rogers was the other one. So there were only three guys 10 years before that who would have even gotten to 20 points. Now we're going to have three in what, the first 3 or 4 years of the program, with Gordon Sargent already accomplishing that about a year and a half ago. Jackson Koivin also at 18 with a made cut at the Farmers this past weekend. So I think we're in uncharted territory though with Clanton. And the reason I say that, and I was just giving you a hard time about the Hogan. I honestly think that you could give him the award today. I actually went back and for our Hogan committee meeting last week. And I had a friend of the program, Jim Colton, whose son Luke is now the top ranked junior in the country. He actually went back and got me the total Wagger points and the Wagger averages for the last calendar year. So basically the Hogan Award voting period, which starts at the beginning of NCAAs and then runs on through till they hand out the award. And Clanton, since last year's NCAAs, where he tied for second, has 1,500 Hogan average points or Wagger average points. Biasair is at 1,400. The next guy after that, David Ford, is at 1,268. So there's such a huge gap, not only between Clanton and Biasair, but between Clanton, Biasair, and then everyone else. So I think at the very least, it's a two-horse race. But man, I mean, Clanton's been so impressive. And you look at the strokes gain statistics on how he would have stacked up last year on tour. He would have been an immediate top five ball striker. I was down at the RSM. One of his runner-up finishes, 4 top fives, obviously. And he was legitimately like upset because he thought that he should win the tournament. And it was just what you would call it, Burke. It wasn't a whiny upset. It was just a legitimate disappointment because he knows that his game is ready for that level. And
Greg, it's almost like the expectation. And I always cush any comparison to Tiger. And I'm not saying it's Tiger, but go back 30 years ago when Tiger, you know, came out and, oh no, I expect to win. Like I'm here to do this. And I think there's a similarity, a parallel between those two, knowing that what they have is good enough to compete with the best in the world.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see what starts he gets going forward this spring too. I would assume that he should be into the Cognizant. It's a hometown event, not quite hometown, but he's a South Florida kid.
Close enough.
That would make a lot of sense. Koivin is obviously into Bay Hill as the Arnold Palmer Cup exemption. But I think at this point, if you're Luke Clanton, and it's tough because I've talked to a lot of people about this, and college golf right now, the season is just starting to ramp up. He's, credit to him, he's only missed one tournament this year, and he's kind of been able to do it where his tour starts have not conflicted really with college golf. That's going to change here in about what? A week and a half, 2 weeks for their team. So it'll be interesting to see when he takes the foot off the gas pedal and really starts running with his teammates again in pursuit of a national championship. I know that's what he really wants. And I know he was trying to get this 20 points out of the way. But I think at some point, if he doesn't get into Cognizant in a few weeks, I think at some point you have to sit back and say, all right, I know I'm going to win the Hogan Award if I just play like I can play against the college competition. Let me go out with my boys. Let me try to win a national championship. We came so close last year. I think in a few weeks, that's got to be the mindset, because if it's not, then why are you playing college golf?
I agree. Couldn't say it any better than that. There's that balance of trying to do it, but why are you actually back in Tallahassee? It will be fun to watch. There are going to be a ton of storylines and narratives that we're going to get into over the coming weeks and months, regarding roster caps, the whole lawsuit money. We're not going to start the new year going down that rabbit hole, because I think there's actually more questions than answers. So I want to lean into what you put out on golfchannel.com, some storylines to sort of take a peek of what we think could happen to, you know, stay in tune with over the coming weeks and months. And since you did such an amazing job on that, I mean, lead us off. Where do we sort of want to go through conference-wise, women and men, what we saw, what we think we might see moving forward here on the road to La Costa?
Well, I'm gonna switch it up a little bit from our rundown, Berko, because I'm thinking that it probably makes the most sense to start out with the best team in the country on either the men's and women's side. Let's go ACC women. Let's start with the Stanford Cardinal. New ACC.
It doesn't make sense, doesn't it? I'm not wrapping my head around it that Stanford is the favorite to win an ACC championship. I know we saw it in football. We're seeing it in basketball. I still see the ticker on channels and you see Pac-12 and it's X and Y. And you're like, well, why are those two teams play? Oh yeah, I forgot. They're in a different conference.
Who is going to be, or I guess in college golf, it doesn't really matter because of the regular season, but I'm wondering if we're going to see any Mick Cronin type situations where, you know, maybe some West Coast schools are a little bit disgruntled. They got to go East, but I guess that doesn't happen a whole lot until you get to conference championships. But this is one of those things where we knew Stanford was going to be great. They brought in, I think you said it as well, the best recruiting class that I've ever seen in college golf with those four studs led by Miha Ortegren. And all four of those freshmen are ranked in the top 50 right now. And I think this team, and it's hard to say because Rose Zhang was so incredible, but I think as a team, top to bottom, this might be the best Stanford team that Ann Walker has assembled. And the crazy thing is it's probably only going to get better because I don't think she has a senior on the roster.
I agree. Deepest team.
At least that plays.
Yeah. I mean, Paul, yeah, correct. And you know, what I always had my eye on was, and I think we talked about it in the fall of where does Mega Gane potentially fit in? And then the beginning of the fall, we were like, ooh, work to do. The work was done. The results followed. She's sort of that energetic spark plug, you know, maybe that Rachel Heck used to be. And Paula Martin, San Pedro, each and every year as a sophomore now. There are no weaknesses. You can go 7, 8, 9 deep, and those that don't play would probably be a 2 or 3 at most other schools. I mean, it's not a foregone conclusion. But in that conference and nationally, I think yet again, they are the standard. Doesn't mean they're going to win everything. But if you're asking us here in late January, I think we would be more surprised if they weren't playing on that Wednesday at La Costa for a national championship.
Yeah. And it's tough to look at the fall and say, well, they couldn't have been too dominant. USC tied them on their home golf course. I would contend that was a very emotional week for Stanford. Ann Walker was not at the tournament. She was with her former college coach, Nancy McDaniel, all week. Obviously Nancy passed away from her battle with cancer back in late October, shortly after that tournament. So this wasn't a team that was at full strength, if you will, because they didn't have their coach there and they were still able to tie a really good team in USC. I just think moving forward, I know their thing in Palo Alto is to not talk about perfect seasons, not talk about any of that. Let us talk about it. But this is as good a chance as ever to not drop a loss at any point in the regular season for this team. And I don't think it's going to be particularly close looking at kind of how these other teams in the ACC performed. Virginia is the next highest ranked team at 11. Florida State's 12. Obviously, Mirabelle Ting missed a couple of events to play professionally. She's won each and every time she's teed it up so far this season. But every other team has one question mark, maybe two question marks. Now, before I kick it back to you, Wake Forest is a team that intrigues me. And they are already back in action. They played that 18-hole sprint up in Athens over the weekend. Chloe Kovaleski, incoming freshman, early arrival. We've seen what that can do to programs in the past, whether it be Stanford or USC with Annie Park. Chloe Kovaleski can come in and be a 2 or 3 player for this team. Slide right up in behind Carolina Shikara alongside Macy Pate. And suddenly, I think they are probably going to end up, as we get to late April, as the main challengers to Stanford.
Yeah, it'll be intriguing. And you rattled off some names that we've seen mid-season additions. How do they transition, get comfortable, you know, get along with their teammates? Certainly some valid points made on the Demon Deacons. Florida State, I can argue the best 1-2 punch in the country. Lottie Woad, Mirabel Ting. But it's the newcomers. It's the three or four freshmen, A.B. Bond, their head coach, as she told me, at Folds of Honor. And throughout the fall, if they can get to where we think they can be, also to look at FSU for the women to be like, okay, is there a three that is dependable in each and every day? But Stanford, certainly the cream of the crop there for the ACC ladies. Let's keep it in that conference. For the men, you know, North Carolina, maybe a little better of a fall than I thought. They lost a lot. Well, David Ford seems to be okay. What was it? The hip that was, gosh, I mean, there was a lot of things moving. Virginia, solid. Ben James, but there's more than just him. You know, Georgia Tech, they're on this kind of 3 or 4 year run where you're like, oh, they lost that person. Crystal Lamprecht's gone, but they're kind of knocking on the door. You know, those are the three for the men that stand out to me. And then I think the biggest variable is Florida State. You know, we just talked about it with Clant. We don't need to go down that rabbit hole, but when is that full throttle ahead, or did they lose too much? They lost, what, three players that at some point were All America selections during their time there. That's a lot to replace if you're Trey Jones, their head coach.
Yeah, and I ran into Trey about a month ago here. He was doing a college golf camp for the College Golf Experience and Josh Jacobs thing there. And he was like, look, I told you at the beginning of the year, we're replacing three All-Americans, like, and you had us ranked second preseason. And yeah, I will admit that was maybe a little bit high, but I think this team is just starting to do what we saw them do last year, and that's build at the right time, peak at the right time. We say it all the time, like, you don't win championships in October. Like, you win championships in late May. And this team, I think, is trending. When you look at the Jones Cup about a week and a half ago, Gray Albright beats his teammate Jack Bigham in a playoff. Tyler Weaver had a top 12 there. I'm not worried about Luke Clanton. Like, Luke Clanton's going to be fine. Like, I know I said earlier, like, he's got to start focusing on college golf at some point. He's going to do that and he'll be fine. But it's the other pieces. It's the Gray Albrights, who didn't have that great of a fall, but they're starting to figure it out. They're starting to get better. And so I think I actually picked Florida State to win this conference. And I think it's wide open because North Carolina, for as surprising as they were and as great as David Ford's been, Maxwell Ford's been almost the complete opposite. He's been concerning. They're young. Other than that, Keaton Vo's been up and down. Virginia's deep. They've been to it before. They've been to match play two straight years at the NCAA championship. They're going to be in the mix, but I just don't think at full strength that any team is better than Florida State. And Duke's a team that certainly intrigues me with Luke Sample and Ethan Evans, Brian Kim. They're a team that's trending. SMU is surprising, but I could list every team here. No team's going to beat Florida State or should beat Florida State over 54 holes and then into match play. I don't see it.
Fair enough. Big Ten. Let's go there with the men. I take a look at your rankings again. Can't wrap my mind around UCLA is the highest ranked team in the Big Ten. UCLA, the Bruins there, Illinois 12th, Northwestern. Those seem to be the three teams positioned to do something. We know what Illinois is all about. We know the talent that is there. We know what Mike Small brings to the table. They're going to be front and center the whole way through the postseason. How far they get, we'll have to wait and see. The Bruins intrigues me because when I was down in Argentina, obviously Omar Morales, a runner-up in the Latin America Amateur Championship a year ago, highest-ranked player in the field. didn't have his best stuff. And I was walking with his group on that 36 hole Saturday, and he kept hanging around and kept hanging around until he hit a very errant short iron that resulted in him playing himself out of the championship. But I think the Bruins go as he goes. I mean, Pablo Arreño is certainly very good. But I think Omar, will he make that jump to that Clanton conversation, to the Koivun as truly like a first-team All-America selection? I believe it's there. It's been fun to watch his progress and growth. But I feel like for them to get to that consistent top 10 level, only because looking at the Pepperdine's event this week, Omar's dead last in the five Bruins. You can have a little bit of a hangover from coming close in Argentina, but sort of like, as you said, with Clanton, you're not worried about him. I want to see Morales each and every week be in the mix, because I think he can be that good. I think he very well might be.
Yeah, certainly Sherwood's beaten up on some of these stars in college golf right now. You mentioned Omar. Gordon Sargent was only beating three guys after 36 holes. Parker Bell from Florida down there as well. So that course can be really tough when it's cold out. So hopefully this is not the sign of something bigger for Omar, because UCLA certainly needs him. I know Illinois is probably, this is their main motivation. I mean, they want to win an NCAA championship, but this might be something that is right next to it on the whiteboard. And that's losing to Northwestern, the Big Tens last year. That snapped, I think, eight in a row.
Yeah.
Like something crazy, like 13 of 14 before that. Obviously, Minnesota won back in 2014, I think it was. But I think I ended up going Illinois here to get back on the saddle in the Big Ten. And that it kind of piggybacks off your story about Omar. Like if he's struggling, that's no good for UCLA. This is a team that made regionals last year for the first time since 2019. They finished seventh, so they nearly got to the national championships at Omni La Costa. But if he's not at full strength, I think Illinois gets in there and shows off kind of, I mean, we talk about Florida State women. I think Illinois has one of the best 1-2 punches in the country when they're on, and Max Herendeen and Jackson Buchanan. And it's a very similar, now that I mentioned Florida State women, it's a very, very similar makeup to that team, and that Mike Small relies a lot on some freshmen at the back end of the lineup. He's proven time and again that when it comes to coaching and getting guys to develop quickly, he's one of the best. So Illinois is a team, I think a school to watch out for. It might be Michigan State. I know they were ranked something like 82nd after the fall, but Ashton McCulloch, one of the top players in the conference, had a very nice fall, obviously built off a run at the U.S. Amateur this summer. There's a lot of question marks. There's a lot of teams that I think are, you know, probably concerned going into the spring. I think Michigan State's got to like where it is, but behind one of the best players in the conference.
You take a look at the Big Ten women, three teams ranked in the top 10, USC, Oregon, Northwestern. I think the women of Troy, we've kind of learned, are always going to be in the mix. It doesn't matter if they're in the Pac-12, the Big Ten. For Jasmine Koo to come in as a freshman, have the fall she did, we know what Catherine Park's capable of. I think if you get maybe a little more consistency out of Bailey Shoemaker, there is maybe the second best team in the country in terms of what's possible. Oregon, Derek Radley just continues to build. A big fan of Kiara Romero. I love how she plays. I love how she goes about her business. You watch her walk on the range or down a fairway, and you're like, God, she looks like a professional golfer in the manner in which she handles herself. And then Emily Fletcher and Northwestern, they're just rock solid. They remind me of Mike Small and Illinois men. You roll up your sleeves, you dig it out of the dirt.
Or the snow.
You know that too. But there's something there. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a one-off. We just see them every year, and I'm always bullish come March or April. This is their year. This is their year to maybe win it all. Hasn't quite materialized, but you know, I think USC, the standard, but a couple others that's certainly within reach.
So I went back and forth on who to pick to win this conference. And initially I had Oregon there, but then, you know, I talk about the Mick Cronin stuff earlier. This championship is at Bull Rock in Maryland. Oregon has not fared well traveling to the East Coast, as we've seen with the Darius Rucker Intercollegiate the last couple of years, where they finished toward the bottom. I think they were even last 1 year. So I think USC, just in terms of that big three, has to be the favorites. But again, playing these golf courses on the East Coast, these it's a different type of golf course, I think, than a lot of you know, these West Coast schools like USC and Oregon see on a day in and day out basis. And because of that, I think Northwestern's got to like where they are. Michigan State's been a team that I've been bullish on for, gosh, I mean, there's been some times in the last 4 or 5 years where I really thought this team on paper looked great. And the COVID year was certainly tough. I thought that was probably one of Stacey Stoll's best since she's been at Michigan State. But this team with Brooke Bierman at the top, she didn't finish worse than T11 in four starts this fall. I think the team had a couple of runner-up finishes as well. They could surprise. I just well-coached, again, like Northwestern, gritty, northern climate. And, you know, it could be one of those things where they win the Big Ten. I mean, they've done so three of the last 7 years. So there's some precedent there. And what about UCLA? I mean, it's probably no secret that they're down one of their best players. Zoe Campos turned pro. She was one of those three collegians to bypass their final semesters of eligibility, along with Adela Cernicek from A&M and Julia Lopez Ramirez from Mississippi State. I think it's big that Caroline.
It's enormous.
I think it's big that Caroline Canales comes back, but do they have enough without Zoe Campos, who's been so great for them, to get into the conversation, not only in the Big Ten, but nationals?
Every team that pops into mind, whether it's Washington from 7 or 8, 9 years ago, Alabama 3, 4 years ago, teams that have lost multiple players, their springs have been a disaster. The records show that. To lose one doesn't help your cause. I think it's going to be a big uphill climb for the Bruins in the spring. Doesn't mean they can't. Zoe Campos is one of the five best players in college golf, maybe one of the best three. So you lose that, you're now losing someone that's averaging, you know, 70 and change from your team tally each and every day. So I think the run they made last year will be very difficult to duplicate in 2025. But the good thing, if you're a Bruin fan, you got 3 months to figure it out.
Also, keep an eye on the Buckeyes. And I'm not just saying that because of, you know, some momentum from the gridiron. They add a player in Chloe Lamb. I think she's from New Zealand. She's going to come in midseason. I think she's going to be huge. I mean, Faith Choi had a great fall. Carrie Hollenbach's coming off a win at the Sally. Like, Lisa Strami, like, she can coach. I mean, we've seen what she can do at Kent State. Like, she can coach. And adding someone like that, I think that's the final piece of the puzzle for them. So that's another team that I wanted to kind of throw out there as a potential to crash the party. This is going to be fun. We should go up to Bull Rock and cover this one. This one's going to be good.
Put in your travel now. Let's jump to the Big 12, start with the men, Arizona State, Oklahoma State, Arizona, the top three teams, all within the top 12 of the rankings. ASU, talented. I mean, the fact that they didn't get to nationals last year, whether they admit or not, has to be motivating. But, you know, Jose Le Ballester, Preston Summerhays, Connor Williams. I mean, they are clearly the favorites. I'm intrigued by Oklahoma State. A couple of new faces. Helped me out the Stevens Cup when they finally won. It was like the longest stretch of tournaments in ages for them. I mean,
ever. Oklahoma, I think it was State, ever. Believed to be ever. That's
yes.
What you always say,
and,
right?
And Alan Bratton and I, the head coach, had some intrigue behind that. Let's see what they're made of. You know what? It has been slim pickings relative to the 70 plus year standard they've had in Stillwater. You know, we quite honestly haven't talked much about Oklahoma State since they won it all back on Carson Creek with one of the great collegiate lineups we've seen in the last, you know, 20 years. Can they get back there, you know, in this new age of NIL and everything else that goes around it? It's not a knock on them because I think it's applicable a lot of places. Your school and what you've done, I don't think sells anymore to the point where, oh my gosh, Oklahoma State offered me a golf scholarship. I'm in. Sadly, that's not what it's all about for the kids these days.
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit more what some of the schools around them are doing. The job that Ryan Hibble's done, what, an hour and a half south of that? You have Texas not too far away. Just the depth of the sport, the parity of the sport, I think has made it to where Oklahoma State isn't the end-all be-all. And that's not to say it's not a great place to go. I think certainly if you want to play golf and play a lot of golf, that's has to be at the top of the list. No offense to the academics there, but I don't think they are first team All-American in school, although I could be wrong. There could be some degree program there that is very prestigious. But anyways, I think though that they are in a good spot at least this year, because when you look at the rankings, especially in this conference, Arizona State clearly the best team as according to Mark Brody, but Arizona's right behind them. Utah's right behind them. I don't think any of those three teams have seen Southern Hills, and Oklahoma State, and it is particularly Alan Bratton as both a player and coach, has a lot of history there. I think they might have won a Big 12 title there in the last half decade or so. So certainly probably should be the favorite. I think I picked them to win, but as far as if we're projecting past that, which of these schools have the pieces to win a national championship? I think you got to look at Arizona State, and they've been there. They've done that. Certainly was extremely disappointing to not make it in the first year after Greyhawk last year, that upset at regionals. And I believe they were at Rancho Santa Fe, but that's a pretty tricky golf course, and sometimes that can trip you up. I know they're going to be extremely motivated. Connor Williams is a player who you look at what he's done and you look at the numbers. He's solidified himself right behind Ballester, and Preston Summerhays is kind of a three-headed monster there. So they've got the talent. Arizona, I'm a little bit concerned about because of the departure of Tiger Christensen. And that came to me as a little bit of a surprise too, because going into DP World Tour Q School, you know, Tiger, obviously I had seen them at the St. Andrews Links Collegiate, and Zach Poyo was the medalist there. They, you know, had a great week there, ran into a really tough and kind of home cooked Northwestern Wildcats team. But I was surprised because I thought that Tiger would go to Q School, would get his status, but then I thought he would come back to school, and that clearly didn't happen. Philip Jakubczyk has not played well in the last 4 or 5 months. And so this is a team that I think might be trending downward. And then Texas Tech, 21st in the rankings. That's unfamiliar territory from where Greg Sands has had this program, the, you know, ever since he's been there. It's going to be there for a long time, just signed a extension as well. And they have some huge concerns. Callum Scott, who was so great this summer, the Lo-Am at the Open, he's not played well. He's ranked like 300th in college golf. Cannot keep it on the planet with a driver, with a 3-wood, with a 2-iron. So that's concerning. And then they're down Matthew Comegys for at least the rest of this season. I actually saw a photo of his wrist surgery. Did not look good. So we're hoping that he recovers from that. And hopefully he can be hitting balls again by next fall and playing some college golf again. So not good, not good for Texas Tech, but you know, who knows.
For the women, Big 12, see, I'm so used to the Pac 12, Arizona State, the two clear top 10 teams. I think it all goes around them. I guess maybe the biggest question mark, is there enough depth? Can they either one or both of those programs sort of get back to that elite level where maybe right now they're just on the outside looking in at two, three, four other schools.
Yeah. And it's, I think I've said this multiple times now, especially in the fall, there's such fine margins when you have five players on your roster. Was it Wake Forest back in 2017, 2018 that had to go to the club golf team and pick someone out to play? Yep. Like that's never good. Now, I think ASU probably has a pretty good club golf team that might not be a death sentence if you're Missy Farke, if you do lose a player. Hopefully that's not going to happen, but assuming that it doesn't, this is an intriguing team because Grace Summerhays hasn't played well. If she plays like she can, all of a sudden they run one through five. I've been, you know, very pleased by what I've seen out of Patience Rhodes. She got off to a tough start to her college career. I think she battled some injuries, just kind of had tough getting acclimated to college golf, but she's taken off. Like, this is a very talented team. I think they, you know, I think they run into a little bit of trouble going to Houston. And I think I picked Kansas, and you have to go what 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams down the rankings in terms of this conference to get to Kansas. But I think Lindsay's done a great job there. Obviously coming over and, you know, a couple of seasons ago, there's a lot of depth on this team, Berko. Like Lily Hurst, I think she had 3 top sevens. I'm looking at, if they could just get their other two seniors in Jordan Rothman and Lauren Clark, who were probably preseason third team or honorable mention all conference going into the year, they've not played well. If they can get them in order, this team runs 6, 7, 8 deep. And so I think that's going to happen. And that's why I project them to win this conference and surprise a lot of people. I think they get to nationals and make a little bit of noise.
Let's go to the SEC. Quick glance. 5 of the top 7 teams, 9 of the top 20 all reside in the Southeastern Conference for the men. And they don't include Alabama, Tennessee, Texas A&M, and Georgia. That's pretty deep. That's strong. And, you know, Auburn, they win 10 times last year, the national champs. You throw Oklahoma, Texas in the mix. Ole Miss ending the fall number 1. LSU's been solid. You know, Vanderbilt's 15. To me, you can throw 10 teams in there, pick out a blind one, and feel reasonably good that they can make a conference championship run. I know it's late January. I'm not sure I ever recall one league being this bunch, because we've done this long enough now, Brentley. It would be, oh, Vanderbilt's the favorite. Oh, North, yeah, Carolina. I don't think that exists this year, which I love the prospects at this point of there's 10 teams that could win a national championship, maybe even more, where for a long time we talked about one or two teams, yet they didn't win it all. So it just shows you the ambiguity of the whole scenario. But you can go anywhere here and feel good about the possibilities.
Yeah, it certainly helps adding Oklahoma and Texas to this conference, the 4th and 5th ranked teams in the country, respectively. I think I'm on the record as saying that Oklahoma is my national championship preseason pick. I like the depth. I like the coaching. And they've done nothing so far to really push me off that. And I forget who said it, but maybe last week, it might have been at the PGA show. Someone asked, like, do you think Ole Miss is for real? And, you know, can they beat Auburn, you know, and can they beat some of these other great teams? And, you know, my answer is yes. Michael Esasso, we know what he could do as long as he doesn't get the stomach virus again, like he did last year around conference championships, which kind of tanked his game. I mean, we saw it. It tanked his game until the fall. But Cameron Tankersley, you know, winning the Patriot this winter, having a solid winter. Cohen Trolio, if they gave a comeback Player of the Year award, which pivot real quick, Berko, if there was a comeback Player of the Year award in college golf, who should it be named after? I know I'm putting you on the spot, but I thought about this. Like the sport needs a comeback player of the year award. There'd be great candidates this year with Cohen Trolio, Clay Merchant at Indiana, even a Scott Roden at TCU. Like
the great namesake of a comeback?
We could obviously come back to this. I'll give you a little bit to think on it.
Yeah, because you think about the GCAA and the women's as well. I think there's the Kim Moore Spirit Award, which sort of personifies overcoming something, but that might be a more of a bigger picture scenario. That might take a week. That might take till next week's pod.
That's your homework assignment.
Hey, you remember this individual who was destined for something, fell off the map, and then came out the other side. So yeah, I'll think long and hard on that one. But a lot of good ones there in the SEC for the men, for the women, Arkansas, South Carolina, Texas, all in the top five. Mississippi State going to look a lot different after their fall campaign. You know, if I'm Arkansas, they're good. Can they keep it going? South Carolina, we've had this narrative for the better part of the last decade. Can they actually get to the finish line or have a chance? And then Texas, you've got a new head coach, Laura Iannello. We saw peaks and valleys in the fall. But I think the peaks have the potential to be a lot more commonplace in the coming months.
Mm-hmm. No, I certainly agree with that. Arkansas is a team that I think I've struggled with because we know with this new ranking system, you get a boost on playing at home, particularly a golf course that you know very well and is very difficult to people who don't. And so there is a bit of a blessings rankings boost. Now that said, I think Maria Jose Marin, like I think she won the South American Amateur by 12 shots in the last month and a half or the last few weeks. So having that kind of talent at the top of your lineup, like you can beat anyone. So Arkansas, I'm not ruling them out, but South Carolina to me is the cream of the crop in this conference. And I think you could put them right next to the other USC on the West Coast, in terms of the biggest challengers to Stanford. And the reason I say that, yes, we know that Hannah Darling has had a resurgence, probably comeback player of the year award on the women's side. Louise Rydquist, she keeps doing what she's doing. But they had Ella Galitsky, the freshman from Thailand, midseason. You've seen her play. I've seen her play. She's long. She's got great touch. Like, she is a superstar. She could come right in and do what Amari Avery did in a semester, what an Annie Park did, what a Rachel Heck did. I'm very intrigued to see what she does in college golf. Now, it's tough adjusting, I guess, when you're an international player. There could be some bumps. We saw even some bumps from Anna Davis last year with Auburn. Didn't really have her best stuff till later in that spring season. But if everything goes according to plan and she plays to her potential, like, this is going to be a very scary team, and I think they're going to finally buck that narrative that this team is soft when it comes to late April, early May. And I think Kaylin Anderson's, she's probably told you that too. She's told me, like, this team needs to toughen up when it matters. We'll see if Ella Galitsky can make that happen. As far as a sleeper, like, speaking of bucking the trend, I think it's finally, I mean, you're wearing the hat. I think it's finally the year. Finally, the year that we see Florida get back to the national championship. It's been too long.
2019,
6 years. Frankly, haven't come close some of those times. It's not like it's been, oh, man, they probably should have been there, and they didn't. Just for whatever reason, just the pieces have not fit together. This team this year, they're deep. Even someone like Caroline Tuttle, like she had a good winter. She didn't play at all in the fall. I think she won either the Dixie or one of those winter events, and to have that.
Yeah, won the Dixie and finished fifth at the Sally.
Yeah, so she's been a real breakout for them this winter. Could potentially slide in to the top five. So, I mean, just they're a little young. So that's my only concern. But again, that might be a good thing because they don't have any of that scar tissue.
Quickly wrapping up, a peek at the mid-majors for the men. Pepperdine inside the top 20. Can they get back to that magical three-year run? San Diego State at 32nd. I'm intrigued. Does Justin Hastings sort of catapult to the next level with that win in Argentina? And UNLV starting at 44th. They're wrapping up the Southwestern Invitational today. UNLV is winning. That 44, well, who knows with the rankings? I don't want to start the new year there. That 44 could become a top 25 or better, potentially, if John Paul Hebert gets these Rebels. Hey, by the way, the job he's done in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Really impressive. And then for the women, you know, I feel like we don't have that Pepperdine from a couple years ago or a San Jose State, you know, that legitimately they were making match play. I'm not quite sure it's in the water right now for them, but could change as well.
So I actually texted John Paul Hebert last night and I said, what's gotten into you guys? And he says, shoot, I don't know. So I think that's actually a good answer to have as a coach, because if your guys are surprising you like this already, like that's a good sign. Caden Fiorini is a stud. If we're adding UNLV now to the conversation, to the national conversation, this is going to be a really fun spring. So I'm super excited to get the podcast back and running. It dusted the cobwebs off, had some technical difficulties earlier this morning, but we got those out of the way. Now it's full speed ahead. Let's go. Travel plans for you college-wise this spring? I assume the Darius. I'm going to be at Randolph here middle of February, and then I'll be on baby watch. But
of course you will. I've got three college basketball games coming up in the next couple of weeks, which I was fortunate to get some opportunities there. So I'll be doing that, then the Darius, Pasatiempo, La Costa, and then, of course, each and every week we'll have a bit of banter right here on College Golf Talk, right? It's what the fans want.
We should also try to get up to the Gator. February 15th, Saturday, Gator Invitational in Gainesville. Gators play South Carolina in hoops at 8:30 that evening after a 36-hole day. That could be, I don't know what your schedule is like, but that could be an interesting sporting
day. I think I've got a game that Sunday, an Atlantic 10 hoops game. I'll have to look at the schedule. Again, I've got three coming up in about a 10 or 11 day window. So, but I'm not ruling it out. I'm not taking it completely off the table. Yeah, pencil it in. But more importantly, always good to be back here on College Golf Talk. A new year upon us. We appreciate, as always, for you tuning in and listening. And we will do it again next week. Thanks so much.